I've actually had one of my family members said the reason I don't leave the Amish is because I can make more money being Amish.
Welcome to Not in a Huff with Jackson Huff, where we interview newsmakers, storytellers, and all-around interesting people. Sit back, relax, unless you're driving, and enjoy the show. Here's Jackson.
Hello, hello, hello. I am Jackson Huff. This is Not in a Huff. Thanks so much for joining me. As always, really appreciate it. Thanks for coming back. If this is not your first time listening, you've been waiting for another episode. I did take a very small break. I missed one episode, and when I'm now posting every other week, that's a month. So appreciate you coming back. Great guest for you this week. I'm interviewing Milo Miller. Now, in the past, of course, I've talked to a lot of people from different religious organizations, whether they are current members of organizations people don't know a ton about, whether they have escaped organizations that some people would call cults. That's always an interesting conversation when we can dive a little bit into the lesser known world of some of these groups. Milo, he was raised Amish. I've talked to somebody who was raised Mennonite in the past, and you know that's kind of a sister organization. But you're going to hear just a little bit about what being raised Amish is like. You know, of course, we all know a little bit about the Amish community. We know that most of them don't use modern conveniences with, you know, electricity and cars and all that kind of stuff. We're going to talk about kind of what that was like growing up in a world like that. We're going to talk a little bit about the belief system and the good, the bad, and everything in between. We're going to talk about how he decided to leave and a little bit about that story. We're going to leave very specific details to you checking out yourself, because Milo has actually went and kind of made a name for himself on social media as somebody who talks about the world of being Amish, whether it's talking about his escape from that world, whether it's talking about some of the home remedies that came out of it. He posts on TikTok and Instagram, all those kind of places, just to give you just a little bit more insight into the Amish community. I think you're really going to enjoy this one. I learned so much. You know, here in Indiana, we have a pretty large Amish community in the northern part of the state. They have like a big flea market once a week. They've got tons of restaurants and pie shops and all that kind of stuff. I think they even have a petting zoo up there. So I've seen Amish people in the past. There's actually some horse and buggies occasionally at my hometown Walmart. So definitely heard a little bit about them, but didn't know it near as much as I know now that I spoke to Milo. So I think you're going to enjoy this one. If you haven't already, or this is your first time listening, really appreciate you leaving a 5-star rating on Apple and on Spotify. Appreciate you leaving a written review on Apple. It helps a ton. But let's get right to the interview. Here's Milo Miller.
Mr. Miller, how are you?
I'm doing good. How are you?
I'm good. I'm good. I appreciate you joining me. Hardest question, just introduce yourself.
So now my name is Milo Miller. I was born and raised Amish. I left the Amish at 17.
Yeah, well, and then now, you know, you've kind of created a social media presence for yourself, which we're going to talk about. But I want to kind of get back to the beginning, kind of to your upbringing. I want to talk just a little bit about, you know, your individual Amish community, because that's something that I've learned kind of through these groups that I've talked to before. Depending on where people are from, all Amish are not created equal. There's different orders, there's different beliefs based on church. Just talk a little bit about, I believe you were from Ohio. Talk a little bit about your individual sect.
So yes, the community that I come from, so I was born and raised into a very conservative, old order Amish community that believed that you had to be Amish to go to heaven. That's what they believe, that that's the only way that you could go. That was kind of their belief system, and just very strict, and it was all about the rules, following the rules.
Yeah, and I had this question later, but I'm going to ask it now. What was it like, given that your sect was so strict? How did they feel about, I guess, some of the other Amish communities? You just talked about how you had to be Amish to go to heaven. How did they feel about the ones that weren't as strict? And I've gotten into this before, like when I've talked to people that were very Orthodox Jew, where it was interesting because they actually, I guess, for lack of a better word, accepted, you know, the the common folk better than they did some of the more liberal-minded Jews, because they're like, you're in our religion, but you're not doing it correctly. So they actually liked people that was non-Jewish better than they liked the people who were Jewish and not doing it right. What did that look like with Amish, with you, with your set?
With my set, we would look at those people as we were taught that they weren't doing it the right way, that our way was the right way, and they were the lost people, and that we shouldn't join them. So you couldn't just go from my community to their community. You kind of have to go through hoops. You have to jump to one community, and then you have to go a little further and a little further, and then you could get to those people. But like my dad, some of my siblings have moved to some of those communities, and he addressed that he just doesn't think that they're doing the right thing.
And were they still, even though they weren't doing the right thing, were they still, did your community still think they would go into heaven? Because I'm thinking in my mind, kind of the loopholes, okay, it's a little easier for them, but they're still going to heaven. So why wouldn't I be part of that?
Well, so he wouldn't say they're not going to go to heaven. So all Amish sects are different, but my sect, they believe that you have to be Amish, and they don't believe that anyone knows if they will have eternal life. They just hope that they're going to get there, and they almost have to live the perfect life to get there.
Yeah. And I want to kind of get into what most people know about Amish, and that's kind of the outwardly appearance. You know, a lot of organizations, you know, walking through Walmart, you really don't know what they are. You know, the Hasidic Jews, they have a very distinct look, and Amish people obviously do too. So let's talk a little bit about the clothing. I know that, you know, there's a big thing with buttons, and I don't think there's zippers are allowed. Just talk about what the Amish clothing looks like, and kind of what your individual group, what they did. 'Cause I think it was different too, when it comes to women and buttons and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. So in my group, we really stood out because our clothing was very old fashioned. Like the men could have 3 buttons, and you were not allowed to like unbutton your collar. And we weren't allowed to actually have lay down collars. We had like a 1-inch collar up here. And then there was rules, the sleeves, you couldn't roll them up so far. And the women, they had to use pins in the front. Now this was the women that were no longer sitting with their parents at church or married women. The younger girls could have buttons in the back to do their dress, and they wouldn't have anything in the front. But we were like very stood out, like our haircuts came straight across, and then they had to kind of come down and back like the very older people do, kind of like the Schwarzentruber Amish. But we weren't considered Schwarzentruber, although sometimes I feel like we were stricter than they were. But that was kind of, we just like pants. There was a rule that you had to, your pants leg had to be big enough to put your shoe through it to put them on. That was just how big it had to be. Not that you would put your shoes on and then you put your pants on or anything like that. But that was just different things, dresses, how close they had to be, like 7 inches from the ground for the women, and just all this stuff. I had went to the class where I was joining the Amish church, and I knew I didn't want to be Amish. So I did go to the class, and they had named so many rules. I lost track how many there were. It almost seemed like there was over 600 different rules that they were just saying. It was like 12 preachers, and they all talked about 5 to 10 minutes about the Amish rules.
What was the rules around footwear? I mean, because I guess I've just seen Amish people, and it seems like a lot of times people are wearing like dress shoes to do some pretty manual labor. What's the footwear aspect?
Yeah, so the footwear was, we had to wear leather shoes, and they had to be black, the soles and everything. Tennis shoes or anything in that kind of category was not allowed. The women could wear low top shoes, but the men had to wear like the high top shoes. And like you had said, no zippers or anything like that. Nothing fancy on your shoes. They had to be very plain.
Yeah. And I've watched some of your videos as far as like rolling up your sleeves, and it couldn't be above the elbow. So I assume you weren't allowed to wear short sleeve shirts. I'm just trying to think, just like I said, with shoes, a lot of times Amish people are obviously out in the outside doing, you know, whether it's farming or whether it's, you know, a lot of different things. And then it doesn't really relate well to the clothing. I feel like, did you just go around sweating a lot? I feel like you wear some pretty hot clothing and some manual labor.
Well, it was something that we were just used to. We didn't know any better. There was days that it got very hot. Now, in my community, you could take your vest, like we would call it a jacket. You could take it off when you're outside working, but when you were on the road, you had to put that on. And when we sat down at the dinner table or to eat breakfast or anything, you had to have your vest on. Now, that's kind of each family. I guess some don't and some do, but the rule was when you drove down the road, you did have to have it on. And so I don't know if sitting down at the table, that was just in my family. I don't know if that was in every family, but I do know driving down the road, that was a rule that we had to have it on.
Yeah. And I guess I want to kind of get to, we talked about your clothing and how, you know, it did look different than the outside world, which I believe people that aren't Amish are they're called English, right?
Yeah, they're called English. And the reason we call them English is because here in America, the language was English and everybody speaks English, not because you are from England. I had a neighbor and I called him the English and he said, no, I'm German. I'm not English. And he was a little offended that we were calling him English. And I've had other people on my socials tell me too, like, I am not English. Stop calling me English. It's very rude.
Yeah. I get that for sure. And we're going to talk about language here in a minute. But so when it comes to the outfits you guys are wearing was different than the English. So my question to you is how did your family teach you that you guys were dressed differently than the English? I'm just wondering, at what point when you were a kid, did you kind of realize that the way that you were growing up was kind of different than most people out there? And did your family ever have a conversation to say, hey, when we're out in public, you may get a little bit of, you know, stares just because of, you know, we've got it figured out and the other people don't? What does that look like?
So they didn't necessarily go over those things with us about our clothing and how their clothing wasn't right. If I had a question with my dad and said, hey, why can't I wear that clothing? They would always just shut you down real quick and say, well, that's not the way we do it. And our way, we don't want to be like them because they're of the world. That's what he would tell me. They're of the world and we're not of the world.
Yeah. And your community, I don't know how large it was, you know, if you were kind of insulated and you were mostly going places that everyone else was Amish too, so you didn't have to worry about it, or were you very much kind of out into the world but still trying to keep things kind of Amish?
So I was raised in a very small community. I think it was like 14 or 15 families. We did not have any relatives in that community. We actually had more English friends than Amish friends. And then my dad moved us from Circleville, Ohio to Kenton, Ohio to isolate us from the English, because I had an older brother that had left and he came back to the Amish, and my dad had an eye on me that he kind of, because at a very young age, I had already said something about I couldn't wait till I got 18. I kind of let some stuff out of the hat. And so he decided, and the way I know this information is because I talked to one of our neighbors that weren't Amish, and they told me, yeah, your dad told us that he's moving you out because he doesn't want to lose his family. So he moved us to a bigger community, which was like 200 to 300 families. And he thought by putting us around more Amish, he could isolate us and we wouldn't leave.
Yeah. Without kind of going deep into, you know, the Amish teachings, I just want to ask you what's one teaching of the Amish community, or at least yours, that people would find interesting?
Just the teaching about it would be, people would just find it very interesting about how the Amish work, like their clothing. And there's one thing that I would like to see more on the outside world is younger children being able to go out and work and do things and just get away from technology. I feel like that is a wonderful Amish, and I'm very grateful that I had, but like just seeing how how they do their routine, their daily routine, from making their breakfast, their lunch, going out and doing their chores. We used to have students from Germany come to our house, and we would go inside. You would show them. We had no cabinets or anything like that to wash our dishes. We had bowls and different things just to show everybody of how they live, because they kind of lived like they did in the 18th.
Yeah, and people being English, because they spoke English, and you guys spoke a different language. I believe it was Pennsylvania Dutch. So yes. My question there is, you know, given that, you know, you have to, I guess, work with the outside world, is most people in the community, you know, bilingual and they can speak English? You know, there's, again, Hasidic Jews, there's people that only speak Yiddish, and they don't, there's people that don't speak English. Does everyone speak English, or is there people that actually only speak Pennsylvania Dutch?
So there are some Amish that can't speak English until you go to school, and you're supposed to speak English 4 days a week, and then Fridays you speak, we're taught German. So the Pennsylvania Dutch is kind of like a German slang that we speak. The reason they call it Pennsylvania Dutch is when the people came, the first Amish moved into Pennsylvania. I'm not sure where the Dutch comes from. It's kind of a made-up slang. But for myself, because we had so many non-Amish English people coming to our house, because my dad was a horse farrier, at age 3, I could already speak English, and I just picked it up myself. We were never really taught English. We just picked it up as our second language from the English coming to our house.
So if you go to Germany, can you get by pretty well, or is your slang so different now that it's not easy to do?
So my slang, the slang that we talked, if somebody would talk German to us, so we read German from the Bible, but we don't speak German. Now my dad, he could probably understand it, but for myself, when somebody speaks German to me, it's so different from the Pennsylvania Dutch that I speak.
And you talked about
learning. So I don't necessarily think that I could. I might be able to pick up some, and I might be able to pick it back up, because I didn't speak Dutch for almost 20 years. And then I was like, okay, let me try to speak it again. And it was a little tough to get it back, but it came back fairly quickly.
Yeah. So you said you didn't speak it for 20 years. You recently needed to speak it.
I did not want to speak Dutch anymore, because when I would speak English to somebody, I'd be mixing 3 or 4 Dutch words in there. And I felt like embarrassed. And I'm like, I'm not going to speak Dutch. If somebody speaks Dutch to me, I'll answer them back in English, because I wanted to try to get rid of that accent, and I wanted to fit in with the outside world.
No, that makes sense. That makes sense. And I guess probably the toughest question I'm going to ask you is just, you talked about how you learned English as a kid because your father, you know, worked in the world of people speaking English. So, you know, if I had to pick one thing that people kind of criticize in the Amish community, and I just wonder what you have to say about it, is, you know, because I kind of read a little bit about things before we spoke, and, you know, people say the Amish are willing to bend their rules kind of when there's money to be made. You know, they'll, whether it's having a phone in the barn, whether it's, you know, finding ways to, you know, have electricity to have a business. What do you say to that? I mean, do you think that that's really the case, or do you think people are misunderstanding things?
So I think that is for some different Amish communities, but I do think they do make some kind of exceptions to that. So if there is something that we can't do, like my dad now, he's an Amish bishop, and he sticks to the rules pretty much. But there are other people that I have seen that have kind of bent the rules and to get by, just so they could make a buck or two. I've actually had one of my family members said the reason I don't leave the Amish is because I can make more money being Amish.
Yeah. Did your family, because I had actually a family member, because we've got a relatively large Amish community here in Indiana, like up in Shipshawana, which is not super far from Ohio. So I don't know whether you know Shipshawana or not, but they had a family. I had a family that would like, after he retired, he would just drive them around. Did you ride in cars?
So we were not allowed to ride in cars in my community if we could get there with a horse and buggy. But it was if it was outside the horse and buggy limits, we weren't really supposed to go. But every once in a while, yeah, we would hop in a truck and we would drive down the road. But there was times where we ducked down when we seen a buggy so they couldn't see that we were in that truck. Because if they would see us, they would actually complain. So you had to be careful, but we weren't allowed to just hop in a truck and run to town and come back.
Yeah, yeah. This is kind of a technical question. I'm not sure whether you know the answer or not, but what, you know, given you said these are small communities, how much were you guys able to kind of branch out and, you know, make sure that there wasn't, you weren't marrying somebody that was relatively close relation? And I'll tell you my experience with this. My wife actually used to work for a blood bank, and they would go into the Amish community and have people donate blood. And every single Amish person at that point was B positive, meaning that they're all not relatively, they don't have to be related, but they're all from kind of the same genealogy to all have that same blood type. So what's that look like given the close-knit communities?
So being in a small community, we weren't related to any of the people, but it was so small, the selection was not quite there of who, there wasn't enough available. So my older two brothers, actually, my oldest sister and my older two brothers, you would go to another Amish community and you would go there and then you would ask a girl out. And then the way you would communicate to her was just by writing letters, and you might only see her 3 to 4 times before you would actually marry her. And the communication was just through letters and all that kind of stuff. But you would go to a different Amish community to find your wife if you couldn't find it in your own community. Now, you couldn't go to those, what we call those less strict communities, where we didn't associate with those communities. They wanted you to stay in those communities that you associated with. And there was like 5 or 6 different communities that my community would fellowship with. So if one of those people would come into town, like a preacher, they would allow him to preach. Now, if a preacher from Shipshawana came in, nah, he couldn't preach and he really couldn't sit with the preachers. He would have to sit with the members of the church.
What age were most people getting married?
So it's around 20 years old. In my community, it was very rare for you to get married at 19. So between, I would say, 20 and 23, a lot of people get married because it's a way of getting away from your parents, because you have to stay with your parents until you're 21 years old. You have to give all the money. So some people, I feel like they want to get away from that. And so they get married just so they can be out on their own. Because if you get married before 21, now you're considered 21.
I got you.
If that all makes sense.
No, it does. So how much of the marriage was, I guess, kind of finding somebody that you are compatible with, and how much of it was, you know, this other community, I'm a male, this other community has a female that's 20 years old and ready as well. Like, how much of it was just pairing ages together, and how much of it was actually finding somebody that you felt compatible with?
I don't think that because the way that we were kind of raised, divorce is not, the Amish community doesn't believe in divorce. I don't feel like they went for somebody that they were compatible with. I don't think that was like the case. It was just, let me find somebody that I can marry. Maybe I like the looks of this woman, and you would go out with her, and in the Amish community, you're not allowed to go like out to eat. In my community, like I said, there's so many different rules in each community, or go do stuff. You would have to go sit in the living room of the parents' house, and you could talk to each other for 3 to 4 hours, and then you had to go home. But I didn't feel like there was that connection of figuring out, am I compatible with her or not? It was just, let's find a wife to get married to.
I got you. And I want to kind of get to your story of leaving the community. I believe you kind of started having inklings in your head about 12 years old. We talked earlier about, you know, interesting teachings or lack thereof. I think yours a little bit had to do with how babies were made. That's kind of what sparked your wanting to leave. But let's talk about 12 years old and kind of what made you decide you wanted to leave, And then you can kind of wrap in, you know, when you were almost 18 and actually did so.
So yeah, around 12 years old, like we were forbidden to talk about how animals were born, how babies were born. We were told that babies just fell out of heaven, kind of. They just appeared. We weren't taught of how they were born. And my younger sister had told my older brother, one of my older brothers, that we told her how baby goats were born because we had a goat that had babies. And we got discipline for that. And I remember my dad disciplined us. And I told him I didn't do it. And it got to the point where it was almost abuse. So I did. I went out in the field and I sat out there and I wasn't going to go in the house. And I finally did. But at that point, I made up my mind that, you know, I don't want to be Amish anymore. I had hung around a lot of English people. We had a lot of friends. And I was with my English neighbor and he sowed a seed in me. He was a Christian guy. And I would always tell him, like, if I do this, like, I'm going to go to hell or you're going to go to hell. And he would always tell me that's not true. Like, they are not teaching you the right thing. That's absolutely not true. So I kind of like got this thing like, you know, maybe it's all right to leave the Amish. But that was the decision. I was like, you know what? At age 18, when I turn 18, I'm leaving. And over the years, I mean, things kind of changed up and down. But as I got older, my dad and me really were bumping heads. I got in trouble all the time for cutting my hair. And it was just, it got very messy. And I was like, the older I got, the more confident I knew that I did not want to be Amish anymore.
So around 18 is when you left, and we'll let people kind of follow along with your social media because you do a really good job even with pictures to kind of show what you did. But you left in the middle of the night, kind of jumped through a window. I want people to check that out. But I want to kind of move into right after you left. But before that, the question I forgot to ask you was, what's that look like in your community when people leave? Because I believe you left, I believe your brother left too. How is your parents looked at? Is it looked at negatively when you have family members that I guess you weren't able to keep in the religion, or do people just, you know, move on and it doesn't really impact their social standing, so to speak?
Yes. Yeah, so they are looked down upon from the community. The community is going to be like, what did you do wrong by not keeping them Amish, teaching them? And so they're kind of looked down upon. And I feel like when I leave, they're not necessarily like, oh my gosh, I just lost a child. Although I do feel like they actually believe that it's almost like my funeral, I just passed away. But I feel like they're looked down upon from the other people. So they're wondering, what is this person going to think of me? My son just left. What is that person going to? And they're like freaking out. And that's why they're so like sad about it. So it comes across like, I'm so sad that my son is not going to be here anymore. It's more or less, I'm sad because everybody, I'm going to be looked down upon. How am I going to be looked at? How am I going to be able to face other Amish people knowing that my son just left the Amish?
And is leaving completely final? I mean, is there mechanisms where people wanted to go back? Would they be able to, or it's just over with?
Yes. Once you leave the Amish, they will take you back with open arms. Now, I have heard in different Amish communities where people were like, in my community, Rumspringa was not allowed, where you could go out and experience the world and stuff like that. It was once Amish, always Amish. I've heard of people getting tattoos in areas that you really couldn't see. But if you had a tattoo, like say on your arm, they would accept you back, but you would never be able to show that. You'd always have to have a long sleeve shirt on and keep that covered up. But they would still take you back, but they would let you know that they're not very happy with you. They don't like that. But as long as nobody sees it, they're okay with it. But if you would show somebody, then they would possibly remove you.
I gotcha. I want to move into right when you left the community. You know, again, and speaking with people that came from really highly sheltered communities, whether it was, you know, the fundamentalist Mormon church, whether it was Hasidic Judaism, they talk about really a hard time, that the struggle to assimilate. You know, they came from places that maybe the education wasn't as great. Obviously, they're not walking away with a ton of money in their pocket, and they just didn't have the experience of the outside world. I know that all of that probably is the case for you. So what did you, how did that look like? Was it a struggle to kind of assimilate, like, hey, I know I want to get outside of things. And that's why I think people struggled, just because it was, even though you know, you didn't want to be Amish in the very beginning, it would probably have been easier just to go back. At least you knew what was happening. You knew how life worked. You were in a community. What did that look like for you? And did you ever think about going back?
So, yeah, it was so to leaving with nothing. And that's why I think a lot of people don't leave, is because they have so much fear of not being able to succeed in the outside world, the non-Amish world, outside the Amish world. So for me, I had no plan. I had no job set up. I just was so desperate to get out, and I left. And right away, I had carpentry skills. I had different skills. But I did have a cousin that had left many years before I did. And my thing was, if I can get picked up and leave, I will be able to get a hold of him some way. I was trying to get a hold of him when I was Amish, but I couldn't find his phone number and stuff. So I was like, get me out. And then the dots just all connected. And right away, I did get me a job right away, like 3-4 days after I left. I started doing construction. 3 months later, I actually had my own apartment and stuff. I was living by myself. It wasn't a struggle for me. And then what was the back end of that question?
I mean, it wasn't a struggle for you, but I guess you kind of answered it there, where whether you ever felt like you needed to go back because you were struggling.
Yeah. Yeah, I ever felt it. No, I did not. Once I stepped out that window, that was the final, there was not me returning to the Amish. And for me, I was so willing to do anything I had to succeed, and I was not going to return. For me, returning to the Amish, it would have been very hard, because they could have came and got me, because I wasn't quite 18, because like I said, I was starting to join church. And if I would have been baptized, and then I would have been shunned. I thought if I leave before I was baptized and became a member of the church, that maybe things would be a little easier. My parents might accept me a little bit, and maybe I could come visit them here and there. But that's not the case. My parents treat me just as if I were a member of the Amish church.
I gotcha. I want to ask, and this is a scary word for some people, and it is scary sometimes and not scary, you know, in other terms. So it's not always a bad word. But so the Amish, they don't have the main tenet of the word cult. They don't have one central leader that, you know, everybody is relying on, but they have other means that potentially. So do you see this as the Amish community as a cult, or just a very strict religious denomination?
So this is my take on it. I believe there are Amish communities that I wouldn't really call a cult. I believe there's communities that it's important for them to have a relationship with God, and that's all that matters. They don't care if you're driving a golf cart down the road or a bike. But like the community that I come from, I think they have a lot of cultish stuff about it. I wouldn't necessarily 100% say, oh, they are a cult, because each family member has their own money. A lot of people think the bishop is in control of the church. It's actually the members of the church are in control of the church. So the bishop is just trying to enforce the rules. So when rules are made, it's kind of like the police, him and the deacon and the preachers, they're on the lookout. And there's also members of the church. So when you see somebody doing something, you're supposed to report them. And if you don't report them, you could get in trouble for that if they knew that you seen that. So it's not necessarily the bishop that does everything. It's just the whole church in general. They actually are kind of over the bishop. They could remove the bishop if they didn't like him.
No, that makes sense. And I want to ask about, just when you were first leaving, I saw you make a video of it. It was kind of funny, but the things that you wanted to make sure that you did in the outside world when you left. I know you decided to go out for some fine gourmet food. You had the fish fillet sandwich at McDonald's, And then you also were really big on movies. I think you were binge watching movies. So when you first left, talk a little bit about the, I guess, the things that you wanted to make sure that you got to experience that you had never experienced before.
So when I left, I got kind of hooked up with some Mennonite people. And my cousin was Mennonite. He didn't have a TV, but I was like, I left to watch TV. I didn't leave to go Mennonite. Mm-hmm. And I remember going to his house and I bought me some jeans and he's like, oh, we're supposed to wear slacks, not like jeans, like the pockets that the way jeans have. And I'm like, wait a minute. I left the Amish. Like, I didn't leave for more rules. I want to be free from rules. So I didn't really get to watch TV for about 3 months. But then when I did get my own apartment, right away, one of the first things I did, I went and got me a TV, had my neighbor take me, get me the TV, and I took it home, set it up, and I was so excited. I'm going to watch all these movies. And then I was like kind of heartbroken to figure out that cable service was kind of required. I mean, there was a couple of channels, but those channels, like, I could watch them and they were interesting to me because any kind of TV, even if it was the news, I could sit there for hours and just stare at it. But I wanted to watch Western movies and all different things. Kingpin is actually one of my favorite movies. It's about an Amish guy going bowling and stuff like that. But a lot of the movies I actually believe to be real. Like when I watched Tombstone, I was like, oh my gosh, like this is so freaking real. Like everything, the movie, I actually had to ask people, is that real or is that not real? And they'd be telling me, it's just a movie, calm down. Like it's not real. And so I had a lot to learn after I left.
Mm-hmm. What did it look like learning to drive? I mean, you left at just before 18, so you weren't really too far behind, but you hadn't, you know, been in cars with your family on road trips, so you still weren't as familiar with cars other than going, you know, far distances. But what'd that look like? How did you quickly go and try to get your license or what?
So I left before I was 18. I couldn't get my license until I was 18 because my parents wouldn't sign for me. But the minute I turned 18, I could go get my permit. And my neighbor, he had an old van, and I turned 18. I went and got my permit. I passed my permit test and he's like, all right, let's go. And I remember one of my very first times that I drove, I went right on the interstate around Columbus, 270. He took me right out there and we were right in the middle of it going down the road. And it was really wild because I had never really driven before. And he was just letting me do this instead of taking me down an old country road. And I really had to learn how to drive a truck. Like, so I did that for a couple times. And then I went in to do my driving test. The first time I failed because I drove too slow. I thought if I drive really slow, they're going to pass me. They're going to know that this guy is good. And I got done with my driving test. And she's like, well, I'm not going to pass you because you didn't drive the speed limit. And she's like, son, you're going to get run over. And so I had to go back and just do the little thing. And the guy was like, I don't know why you passed the first time. And I'm like, well, I drove the speed limit this time, made sure I did. But then once I got my first truck, we went to pick my truck up and I had a guy go with me and it was $1,200. The guy wanted for this truck. I went there and I said, yep, I'll take the truck for $1,200. And my friend, we left and he's like, Milo, that's not how you buy a truck. He's like, I could have got that truck for you for less than $900. And you just up and paid full price for it. And just things like that. I didn't know that you could wheel and deal. I just wanted a truck.
Well, hey, you at the end of the day, whether you could have saved money, you still got the truck. So that's the important part. You know, it's been 20 plus years since you left the community. Is there anything, I guess, that you still, I guess, it's still in the back of your mind, you still struggle with it all? And again, while you're maybe thinking about that, you know, I've talked to people who have been part of, you know, communes and cults, and they left 50 years ago, but even know that they're completely away from it, they still occasionally in the back of their minds, like, ooh, you know, such and such wouldn't like this. Or they think they find themselves kind of changing their what they're doing or their mental aspect just a little bit because of, you know, how they were, you know, so brainwashed for a little bit into what they were doing. So Does the Amish world at all still play a part in what you do?
I do have a lot of work ethics and stuff like that, but yes, I'm still actually learning stuff, different things. Somebody will say something to me and I'll be like, I have no idea what you're talking about. We didn't use that word. My language is like, use common words that I can actually figure out what they mean. So there are some things, but when I left, I really wanted to make sure that I fit into the world, and I got away from that. Now, if like I go visit my parents, I actually, if I would have to describe how that feels, I would have to say it's like going to my own funeral and experiencing what my own funeral is going to feel like. So it's like pins and needles. It's still like when you drive in there, it's like something that you do not want to face. You just don't want to go there because I know how they're going to treat me and how they're going to look at me and how they're going to tell me, you're just not living the right life. You're going to do this, you're that. And it just, it's very uneasy to do that.
Yeah. Yeah. And you mentioned earlier, kind of a one thing that you enjoyed about the Amish community, and that was kids were actually outside and, you know, they weren't just behind screens. So you've already said that one. What's maybe one other thing that's really positive about the Amish community?
I think a lot of it is a family, like staying connected with each other, family gatherings, and they're kind of more or less a close-knit family. It goes from family to family, obviously, but just that community that they have, helping each other out. When there's a barn to be built, hundreds of Amish will show up to help put that barn up. Now, a lot of people say Amish put the barn up in one day. That's not necessarily true. A lot of preparation goes into it before that barn is put up, but it's like once that preparation is done, it can go up in one day. So that's one thing I really like is how they help each other out.
Yeah. What did it look like when you left and now decided that you needed to join the outside world? And that meant, you know, finding your own relationships outside of the Amish community. You know, you weren't just looking at that one group. You had the whole world. What was that like for you? And then, you know, with your potential spouse, I don't know whether you're married now, but what does that look like? Because I feel like, you know, it's a learning experience for you, and it's also a huge learning experience for anybody that you were to get with, just because, hey, the person that I'm with grew up a very different way than I did. And you've got to kind of learn that there's going to be some, I don't know about struggle, but you're going to learn that there's going to be some differences. And that's something that I feel like a lot of people have always mentioned when I talk to people like this.
So yeah, when I left, I had some problems like connecting with the outside world, but in the back of my head was, if I can find me somebody that left the Amish that I could get married to, or somebody that has any kind of Amish backgrounds to know how, like, I was brought up, that is the way things needed to happen. So I did marry somebody that had some Mennonite backgrounds, but later I did go through a divorce. And connecting with different churches, of fitting in with this church, I am a God-fearing man. I do attend church. Of like Baptists, I went to a Baptist church and they were wanting to baptize me like right away. And it was just something like, whoa, wait a minute. Like, you guys have rules. I don't like rules. I've been with the Amish, have all these rules, and I left to get away from this stuff. So the church that I found that fit me the most was an undenominational church, a Bible-based church that we just believe in the Bible. We don't believe the Bible is our guideline of how we should live. We don't have to follow certain things. Now, obviously, like dress codes and stuff like that, modesty, we should do that. You can't just walk into church dressed unmodestly. But so that is a church that I go to. And
Yeah, no, I love that. Well, your church lets you wear cool cowboy hats like you got on now. So it must be all right.
Yeah.
In kind of wrapping things up, we're going to mention the social media side of things. So obviously you've made it very public at this point, but how, you know, for the last 20 years, when you've been outside the Amish community, you haven't always had this social media presence. So, and you talked earlier about how it was really important for you just to kind of leave that all behind, the Amish world. So what did it look like throughout your life when people kind of learned about your upbringing? Is it something where kind of everyone that knows Milo kind of knew that you were Amish growing up, or was there times that people are like, whoa, I had no idea, and then you've got to answer 7,000 questions?
So when I first left, I didn't want anybody to know that I was former Amish. But then there was times where I would be like, I would tell them, yeah, I'm ex-Amish, or I was from the Amish. And yeah, they wanted to know, is this true about the Amish? Is that true about the Amish? And they'd be asking me some questions and stuff like that. And then they'd always tell me, if you ever write a book, like, I'll buy that book from you. Like, your story sounds very interesting, because I guess I have fallen from a silo when I was Amish, and I fell 35 feet to the ground. So that was kind of a story that I would tell everybody. Like, it was just an open book.
Yeah. And, you know, I asked this question at the end because I've already made you speak for 40 minutes about, you know, growing up Amish. But how much do you like having to talk all about all this? You know, when I've talked to other people that have social media, they say, frankly, I created this social media just so I could be like, go check out that video, so they don't have to talk about it all the time, because when people found out that they were from this group, then they have to answer questions relentlessly. Do you still kind of enjoy talking about it, or are you more like, you know, you don't love it as much, and that's why you make the video, so you can refer them to them?
Well, I mean, I think I can reach more people outside of my area. I do it is just to kind of educate people, and I try to direct them toward my community. I do upset a lot of other Amish from other communities going into the chat saying, oh, not all Amish are this way, because they fear that people are going to look at them. Amish do not want to be called a cult or cultish. If you say that word, that offends them a lot. So they don't want to be called that. So when I say, like, my community is a little cultish, they think that everybody's going to think that they are the same way.
Yeah.
And I was going to say, I lost my train of thought on that one, but.
Yeah, I feel like I would almost have to agree with them a little bit, because I don't think the outside world realizes that there are all these different sects. They just know Amish and they don't know anything else. So I think the work that you're doing, because I've watched a lot of your videos, and you are very careful to say, you know, this was my group. So I think if people are truly taking to heart what you're saying, they realize that not everybody's the same. So at the end of the day, I think the work that you're doing is, I mean, making the community better understood. And when people understand things better, then they're not as afraid of it. So I don't think that's a bad thing by any stretch of the imagination. So, but I guess I want you to tell us a little bit more about, You mentioned why you started the social media aspect, but talk a little bit more about what people are going to find if they check it all out, and kind of the future for all things Milo Miller online.
So I think, yeah, my videos, I mean, just educating people. I don't have any hard feelings toward any, like, my parents and stuff like that. My videos are just like, basically, if somebody in the Amish community feels like they want to leave, I want to give them hope that they can actually do what I did, be successful in life. When they step away from that, I want them to know that they will not be going to hell if they step away. They can still have a relationship with God. But moving forward, just my videos, to check out my stuff on my channel on TikTok and Facebook, Instagram. You're just going to learn a lot about my Amish sect. I do talk about some other Amish and stuff like that. You're going to learn how we did things and how we operate. But like I said, and you said, not all Amish communities are the same. They're different from community to community. So if you go to a community like Lancaster, Pennsylvania, Holmes County, Ohio, like Holmes County, Ohio has got a lot of different kind of communities, and they do have some that are similar to me. But you're going to find all different kinds. You're going to find some that would work in stores. Like in my community, that would be totally forbidden.
And you're in Florida now, right?
So, yes, I'm in Florida. There's actually an Amish community down here. A lot of people from Shipshawana, all over Indiana, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Illinois, probably Wisconsin, Missouri. They all come to Florida during the winter. A lot of elderly people, and a lot of people just because it gets cold up there and they're not able to work, And they just come down here for a couple months just to enjoy things. And down here is more free. It's almost like the Amish Vegas. What goes around here stays here.
Yeah, and I've seen you make videos, you know, in Pinecraft. How are you very far from there? I just thought that was interesting that you made videos. I don't know whether you kind of stuck around that area just to have a little bit of familiarity or whether you just kind of made videos in that area and that's not where you're at.
So yeah, I am fairly close to that area. I'm a little bit outside, but I drive through Sarasota every day for my work and everything. I do own my own business, doing custom kitchens, installing them and stuff like that. So I go through there pretty much every day, right close to Pinecraft where the Amish community is. And they're all over the place. I see them out on their e-bikes, riding their e-bikes around. Then I travel to Longboat Key, San Armands, Lido Beach. And a lot of the Amish are going to the beach. And that's where I get a lot of cool videos is I'm driving home and there's two or three Amish people like zooming by me and stuff like that. So it's always like you got to have your phone ready to go because you never know when that moment is that you're going to capture something that you really want to show the world.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah, I think, I mean, this conversation could be twice as long if we really dug deep. But the great thing is you have, you know, all those videos for people that want to hear more and learn more about your experience and about the community you grew up in. So I recommend people checking out those videos. You've talked about how you're on TikTok and Facebook and Instagram, but shout out what your handles are on all of those.
So my handles on TikTok are X Amish Milo, which is EX_Amish_Milo. I do have two accounts. The other account, I do share a lot of home remedies and stuff. And if you just put at Milo, that is that page. The other one is at Milo Miller. And then at Facebook, I am at Milo Miller on Facebook. Instagram is X Amish Milo _ on the back of it. That's all in one word on Instagram. And that's where you can find me.
Yeah, and all of that will be in the show notes too for people to click. But yeah, I really, really appreciate your time, Milo. Thanks so much.
All right, thank you.
So that was Milo Miller. Hope you learned a lot. I sure did. I really appreciate his candidness and just talking about all things Amish, you know, whether it's the good parts, the bad parts, we covered it all. You know, I like to see things on both sides. And of course, there's good things about the community and there's bad things too. I really appreciate Milo coming on. Urge you to check out his social media. You can learn a ton more things about all things Amish. And, you know, he's got parts where he talks about remedies. He's got parts that he talks about his own story. He's got parts that he talks about, you know, lesser known facts of the community. So urge you to check that out. The links to all of his social media will be in the show notes. He mentioned them right at the end here too. But just a pleasure speaking with him. If this is your first time listening or you haven't already, go leave that 5-star rating on Apple and Spotify. Leave a written review on Apple. Helps a ton. But if you do nothing else, catch us next time. Take it away, Chris.
This has been Not in a Huff with Jackson Huff. Thank you for listening. Be sure to join us next time where we will interview another amazing guest who is sure to make you laugh or make you think, or hey, maybe even both. But until then, keep being awesome.